Fuck yes.
Dude, I love the video that Tommy made.
Oh, Tommy's.
The fucking animation.
You gotta go check out Tommy's animation. That motherfucker.
Where is it at now?
Live.
Where can you get it?
We're live?
We're live. We're live. Where can you get that animation?
On Todd Guarantee on Tom's Instagram.
Is it available?
Dude, he paid for that.
I know he did. He paid for that. It's amazing. It's amazing. He showed it to me last night at the Ice House. It's fucking amazing. So whoever did that is really talented. It's very funny stuff.
His fans are the most creative fans ever. Dude, he's got fans in Indonesia who teach English to children, and all they do is teach them how to say bird is fat.
And jeans.
And jeans.
Say jeans.
Jeans.
High and tight. Oh, so strange. He's got a real weird niche. Like him and his wife together on that podcast. It's a weird, like, silly show.
We should, the six of us should go out to eat one night, because watching the two of them interact is there. It's just inside jokes between the two of them.
Always.
And it's
right?
So much fun to be. They really are one of the funnest couples that I've ever befriended in my life.
It's weird that it works so good. It's like every comedian couple, when they're two comedians, you're like, how long? It's like a bomb. Like, you're just standing next to it, like, I got to get out of here before this thing blows.
Yeah.
But with them, it's like, it just works.
It's so funny, too, because he's known me probably 15 years. And the other day we're hanging out. This is just me and him bullshit. And he goes, he's got two kids. Their house, you can tell they have two brand new kids. Ellis is running around like a lunatic with a balloon running into walls. The kid's a wrecking ball. The other one's an infant. And he looks at me and goes, I can't believe you did this with no money. I just had kids like, fuck it, it'll work out.
Wow. Yeah, that's true, right? How old were you when you first started having kids?
32, I think. My daughter's 14.
And how long into comedy were you then?
Oh, like, I started at 26, so 8 years.
Wow.
Maybe. Yeah, 8 years, probably 6 years. Someone could do the math better than me.
Yeah, so it's 6 years, and, like, that is not a good time as a comedian. 6 years in is rough.
I was featuring. Georgia was born on like a Tuesday, and we induced labor so that I could go feature for Dave Attell on Thursday.
Oh, my God.
And I was so excited to work with Dave Attell. I was almost as excited to work with Dave Attell as to have a kid.
Where were you working?
Miami. I worked that stretch.
That was a terrible place to work.
No shit.
Dude, I was just in Miami. I was in Miami a few months ago, and I did that cell phone bag thing because I did it before I filmed my Netflix special.
Yeah.
I did it for a while where they'd have to put their phones in the bag, then I stopped doing it. It's just, it's complicated. It's annoying. It takes, especially when you're doing two shows, it's a giant space in between shows. But never have I seen a crowd, like, because to use your phone, you got to get out of the arena and then come back. Everybody was just constantly going out. They were constantly getting up. I mean, it was just, it was like I was doing stand-up, not in front of people sitting down, but in front of people in a constant state of moving, sitting down, and getting up.
That's fucking insane.
They were just constantly moving. Like, no place I've ever been. They have zero attention span. I've always said, if you want to starve to death, open up a bookstore in Miami. These motherfuckers, they just do coke and fuck each other and party. Not everybody. I know, I'm generalizing. If you're like, bro, I read. Billy Corbin loves fucking Miami, so.
Bro, I started headlining. Miami was one of the first clubs that let me headline because I had handled the room.
They just, like, take a white guy, anyone.
Dude, I had the most crazy experiences I've ever had there. One night, it's me and two other comics. I'm headlining, right? It's Sunday night. And I say to the manager, I said, it seems pretty rowdy. Are they heckling her? And then he's like, yeah, it's pretty bad. There's gangbangers in the front row. I was like, can we escort them out maybe? And he goes, I think they have weapons. I'm not comfortable with that. I was like, so what are we going to do? And he's like, I don't know. Tread lightly, I guess. Feature act goes up. This is a 100% swear on my children true story. Feature act goes up. They destroy him. He comes back.
Oh, my God.
Thinning hair, matted, sweaty to his head. And he's like, it's not good. So I go out and I do an old Dave Attell trick. It's a comedy trick, but I watch Dave do it. Where he would ask the audience a question that he had the joke for. So he'd ask them the setup. Hey, what's the best way to please your wife? You know, and then he had the joke. Hey, what's the best way to give oral sex to your chick? And the guy's like, and then the guy would tell his joke. And then obviously you have the better jokes. You wrote it.
Right.
You're like, oh, no, what you do is you put your lips around her entirely and go, oh. And so right. I do that with these gangbangers for like 35 minutes. And it's killing. The whole crowd's like, finally, we're all having fun. I look off to the left, and all of a sudden, one of them, a darker guy, named Ray, gets up on stage, and he's like,
on stage.
There's no stopping this.
With you.
With me. He's like, this is a real motherfucker right here. This is a real motherfucker. Oh, you know what real motherfucker's getting the 305? Pulls his pants down and shows his dick, and it is massive. Massive and dark. Like, and everyone's silent. I'm like, okay, Ray. Thank you very much. He's like, show your shit, son. I'm like, not now.
Show your shit, son.
Show your shit, son. I was like, not going to happen now. Not going to happen now. I go, you know, you might want to leave. I'm sure they're calling the cops. And he's like, good looking out. And he leaves, right? So I'm like, I have nothing to say. I have nothing to say. I'm like, how do I follow that? All of a sudden, lighter skinned dude, face tattooed, dreadlocks, stands up real slow. And I'm like, oh my God, please save another dick. Gets on stage and just goes, this is a real motherfucker. You know a real motherfucker's getting the 305. Pulls his pants down and he has an equally almost like lighter two-tone dick, like a purple ring around the, like, and the place is going bananas. They're like, oh my God, oh my God. I go, listen, brother. I go, they're definitely called the cops now. You definitely want to go catch up with Ray and get a ride home. Thank you so much for the, you know. And he's like, good looking out, good looking out. He gets off stage, right? I swear on my children's lives.
I believe you, man. No, I worked there.
They're with a hairless albino.
Girl or guy?
Guy. Okay. And I go, so funny, man. The only dick I ever wanted to see was yours. And the quiet audience is quiet. He slowly stands up, and everyone's like, no, please let it happen. Gets on stage, drops his pants, and it is huge. No hair. It looks like a lighthouse. Just, I just drop the mic. I go, that's my show. And I just walk off stage.
Nice.
It was the that club was fucking insane.
This episode is brought to you by Hostage Tape. First of all, what a great name. This is a product that I use, and I started using long before it was an ad. Your sleep game is about to get a whole lot better, kids, because I want to introduce you to Hostage Tape. Put simply, it is tape for your mouth. But you're probably wondering why you should even need that. Well, if you're a mouth breather, if you snore a lot, or if you suffer from sleep apnea, this could make a big difference. This mouth tape can reduce or eliminate snoring and apnea, and at the same time, it'll help filter the air going to your lungs, increase your oxygen uptake, and improve circulation, which will make you feel more energized. It has tons of other benefits too, like it helps with bad breath, dry mouth, and of course, better sleep. For you and your partner, don't let bad sleep hold you hostage. Shut your fucking mouth with Hostage Tape. Buy it today and get a special buy two, get one free offer. That's a 90-day supply. Just visit HostageTape.com/Rogan. That's HostageTape.com/Rogan. Insane. You know what happened? They started giving out free tickets.
Yeah.
And it just went off the charts. Like, no one was paying. And it was all just, like, young kids. And I remember I had a joke once where I said something about, I think, Oscar De La Hoya. It was like a joke about boxing. About, like, you know, taking a left hook from Oscar De La Hoya. And someone yells out, fuck him! Fucking Fernando Vargas! And then someone goes, fuck him! Julio Cesar Chavez! And they just start fucking debating about what... I'm like, guys, this is a joke. It has nothing to do with boxing, even. What the fuck? But it turned into this, like, gigantic argument over, like, which Latino boxer is better.
Oh.
Craziness. I've never been to a club that was more out of control. And I saw it get out of control. Because when I first started working there, it was fine.
Yeah.
It was fine. And then somewhere along the line, it just went to chaos. They started doing just rowdier and rowdier acts. So they're getting more and more young kids. And then sometimes you would go there and the whole audience would be like 18.
Oh, yeah. And not everyone spoke English. That was another real problem in that club.
Dude, you never saw anybody kill. Like you see Diaz do Spanglish in front of those fucking people.
Oh, my. Yeah, because he came up in that club.
Well, he was always there.
Yeah, I think him and Ricky Cruz, mm-hmm. all those guys yep. had all worked that club and just were, I bet Joey.
Murdered. I worked with Joey there a ton of times. But, you know, Joey and I, we knew how to work together. Like, it worked. And I'm, you know, from doing the Comedy Store so much, I'm just used to chaos. You know, yeah. You get used to chaos.
I like but, chaos.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun sometimes, you know, as long as you're not filming a special. But if it's just a show, it's just a show and it's chaos, it's fun. But
that was my first taping in Philly.
Oh my God. Philly's a wild ass place too, in a different way.
I called Tommy. He goes, "That's why we tape too, brother. Have good luck on the next one."
Yeah. Yeah. I take four now. I do four now.
Dude, that is genius.
It's a way to do it. I really should do six.
Chappelle did nine.
Just the way to go. It seems like it's not, but the thing is, like, you want to make it the most like a regular show. But the ironic thing is, most of what I use from the first show, because I'm so loose, because I know I have four shows. It's like, it's different. It's when you're filming one show. Like, I always remember seeing Bill Hicks' Relentless, which is the one he did in the UK. Mm-hmm. It's a big theater in the UK, and it's
with
like
a duster and a cowboy hat.
Yeah, giant production. He comes out to like a Jimi Hendrix song, and there's fire behind him, and all this shit. And you could feel the tension. Like, he's got tension because he's got one shot at this, and he did a great job, but it was stiff. It's just stiff. And like, I was dating this girl at the time. She's very smart. And I watched it with her, and she's like, "He's interesting, but this is not funny." And the way she said that, I was like, wow. Like, I was a giant Bill Hicks fan. I was like, hurt. I was like, I wanted to argue with her, but I was like, I can't argue with her.
Yeah. Because
she's kind of right. I didn't laugh when I was such a fan that, like, watching him was, like, important to me. Like, I wanted to watch it. Like, because I felt like he was a very important figure in comedy. Even though Ari Shaffir shits on him relentlessly. But when I was watching him, I was thinking, she's right. Like, it's not really making me laugh at all.
Yeah.
But I know the material's well thought out, and it's very good. But it's just that I recognized it. It's like that one show thing. You're filming one show. You got one shot at it.
See, I think because I come from a baseball sports background, I like having pressure on me. I mm-hmm. love that feeling of you got one shot. So in Philly, we did two. And the first one, it rained. The generator went out. And we had to hold the audience in the rain for an hour and a half.
Oh, Jesus.
They lost their buzz, right? They're soaking wet. They finally come into the show. They're in the show. They're trying to catch a buzz again. And it was a bad show. Legit, I didn't even do well. Like, I remember telling my buddy Tony, who produced it, I go, I've had bad shows where, like, when you're moving, you accidentally stand on the mic and you go to move and then the mic moves away from your mouth. And I did it. I fucking did it.
You willed it into existence.
I told my wife, who was there, I go, if I flub a word, like, just write it down so I can pick it up clean in the second one. She walked into the green room, all my agents, all my managers, producers, and with a notepad, and goes, I don't even know where to start. I got one more shot. I got one shot. And in my head, I have that high school Bert Kreischer, like, you said you like pressure. Let's go, motherfucker. You got one show. Like, I'm getting chills talking about it, going, let's go. You're not fucking up one word. You're having the show of your fucking life. My buddy Tony Hernandez, who produced it, comes over and he goes, let's get a coffee. And back in high school, it would have been like, bump a Coke. But he's like, let's get a coffee. We're grown-ups. Had a coffee, went on. And Joe, I swear to God, the best show of my life. The best show of my life, to the point where I was like, I fucked around a little bit on stage, and I just kept it in the special. I was like, and I think if I did nine, they'd be sloppy. If I do two and I go, fuck, I got one shot. I gotta get this tonight.
I see what you're saying.
I feel like you really go, this is important to me. I mean, I'd love to do four.
I think you could do as many as you want, honestly. You know, it's just a matter of, like, that pressure of that second show, if the first show, I think that's one. I mean, I was talking about this with Chuck Palahniuk yesterday. Did I say his name right? Yeah. Yeah. For sure?
Palahniuk is what you
have. Palahniuk?
Palahniuk.
Like, terrible moments on stage, I think, are like the best thing ever for your act. Like, eating shit. Eating shit's the best thing ever for your act, because then you recover from that. And you're like, ooh, I don't want to feel that again, ever.
That's a bad feeling, too.
It's the worst. And you bounce back. You figure out how to tighten everything up. You figure out how to – just even a bad moment, a joke that doesn't work. You know, like, but jokes that don't work. I've got some new stuff, man, that is just not that good. I've got some new stuff that's just like – it's in its infant stage where it's just like wobbling around. Every now and then I'll catch it. I'll catch it perfect. And it's like – because I've only been doing some of them for like two or three shows, you know, so they're like wobbly. that I don't know where I'm going with them. And I'm trying to figure it out on stage and fuck around with them. That's like the whole purpose of doing all these shows,
yeah.
In town especially. And but those haunt you in the ride home. You're like,
oh. That's why I'm grateful I work at the store.
Oh, yeah.
Right before I did my special, my closing bit I do on the show, on the special, the closing bit, I sat with you for a fucking hour in the back room because I took it up in the main room following like D'Elia, and I just said, here we go. And I, man, that club can really let you know where the silence is.
Yeah.
And you go, all right. And then you're like, oh, I've been lazy. I've been performing to fans who will give you the benefit of the doubt.
Who love you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they want you to succeed. But when you do a Netflix special, you need it to be to strangers need to like it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the old Louis quote that I used to hang my hat on. They were like, why don't you work at UCB? And he goes, anyone can make them laugh. He was like, I'm famous. Like, if I go in, like that's like making your friends laugh. This is why I do The Road, is you, the art form is to make strangers laugh.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, it is to make strangers laugh.
Yeah. Well, it's also, you don't want a delusional perspective. And one thing that does happen to some comp, like Stanhope lives by it. Like, he's like, why would I go and do someone else's audience? He goes, it took me 25 years to make my own audience. I'm like, okay, I get it.
Yeah.
But I really feel like to develop material, to really do it right, you got to do it in front of just regular people. People that aren't necessarily there to see you. And the beautiful thing about the store is if there's 15 people in the lineup or 20 people in the lineup, whatever it is, how many are there to see you? 10%, 30%,
yeah.
20%. Like, you know, maybe they're there to see you and D'Elia and also, you know, Tom and also Christina. Like, it's, they're just comedy fans. They're not Bert Kreischer fans.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's giant. That's giant. Because those guys that like develop like that, I've seen a few people that develop an audience and that's all their audience. And they just get real complacent, real lazy.
I say lightly because there's some internet comics, meaning like YouTube comic people that do comedy now, and mm-hmm. some are good and some are developing. I don't know. I was saying that to be polite. But like, but that one guy got booed off stage in Montreal because he's been performing to fans.
Oh, well, here's the other thing about that guy. That guy goes up on a show where there's all these other comedians on, and then at the end of his set says that comedy shouldn't be about preaching. It should be about making people laugh, right? It shouldn't be about ethics or morals,
sexuality
or, values,
or race.
It should be about making people laugh.
People pay to forget about that stuff.
Bitch, you are on stage not making people laugh. That is what you're doing.
Yeah.
You silly fuck. It is one of the silliest things I've ever seen in my life. It's like, this is, and he's essentially a beginning comic.
Open mic, he's maybe been doing stand-up 3 years, tops.
So he does, like, videos, and the videos are very popular.
And they're
right?
funny.
Yeah.
If you're from the South, they're really funny.
Just, unless someone's doing your shit, unless they're stealing or stealing from somebody else, just do your fucking act. Unless something happened before you that's so egregious and ridiculous that you feel like you have to address it when you go on stage because it's just sitting in the room.
Yeah.
And to just try to do, ever notice, you know, when you pick up your phone, if you just try to do that and everybody's like, what the fuck? You're not going to address what just happened? Sometimes you have to address what just happened.
Yeah.
Like sometimes someone will go on before you and just eat so much shit that you have to say something. You have to say something.
Yeah.
You have to.
Yeah.
But what that guy did was ridiculous.
To tell someone what comedy is and what isn't, I had read an article about that this, I'm assuming she's a gay woman, wrote about like trashing Hannah Gadsby and going, hey, we're gay and we're doing stand-up comedy. We're not just preaching. We're doing stand-up comedy talking about our trauma and it's working. You just don't see us. So don't write us off and say comedy's dead because you don't see us.
I don't think Hannah Gadsby's saying comedy's dead. I think journalists are saying comedy's dead, and I think we're all buying into it because these people who are writing these articles, they're not even in comedy. They're just comedy fans or fans of her. And what I think she did, and I've only seen part of it.
I saw the whole thing. I'll tell you right now, she has one joke I like a lot.
But it's whatever she did is fine. Here's the thing. It's her artwork. This is what she's doing. It's fine. Like it's if people enjoy it, that's great. But the problem with comedy is that comedy is one category. It's just comedy. But comedy could be Cat Stevens. It could be Guns N' Roses. It could be the Ghetto Boys. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like when you go to see music, there's very distinct genres. There's just comedy. Comedy is just comedy. Like you could go see a folk singer and what they're doing on stage, like really slow and quiet, is music. But then you go to see fucking Led Zeppelin and you go, okay, well, that's music too? How the fuck is that music too? You know, how is Motley Crue the same kind of thing as Cat Power? How mm-hmm. is that? How are they the same? Well, they are both music, just like we do comedy, and she's doing a version of comedy. Yeah. Some of it is really funny, and some of it is her just talking about stuff in like a very serious way. That's fine.
Yeah.
We're not against each other. This is what's crazy. Everybody's like, you know, this is deconstructing comedy, and comedy's dead now. Like, what are you talking about? That's crazy. Well, no, she's doing what she's doing. If you enjoy it, and that's what you want to see more of, go see that.
Yeah, that's what
great.
She does.
That's great.
She has a great joke about unicorns that I giggle about once a week. And I'll tell her jokes. It's not on Netflix. You can see it. And when I was growing up, I knew more facts about unicorns than I did lesbians. She goes, there are no facts about unicorns. I was just like, that's a good fucking joke.
That is a good joke. Yeah, I mean, that's her experience, right? She's a lesbian. It's hard out there for a pimp. It is. I get it. It's fucking like we are. I think people create unnecessary and artificial adversaries. I really do, and I think this is one of the ones that's going on right now in comedy. And I see it all the time with this Nanette thing. It's like stop with the art. I mean, I fall into it too. I buy into it too, and I read some of these articles. Like, comedy's not dead. What the fuck are you talking about? It doesn't make any sense.
You read the article and you start thinking she said it. Like the way
exactly.
You're like, oh, she's telling us I can't do comedy anymore. Right. She didn't say it. She just did something, and someone interpreted it that way.
And if she says she can't do comedy anymore, that's fine too.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? She could just do, like, now she's famous, right? She could just do one woman specials or one person specials or one entity specials. How are we framing it?
I wouldn't even say it, Joe.
Can I say the gender?
I would be like, she does a thing.
Gender's off subject. You can't. It's off limits.
Oh.
Gender. Can you imagine that? Remember when you were a kid? If somebody came up to you one day, you're going to have to ask someone whether they're a boy or a girl, and it's going to be very delicate, and you're going to have to ask them what their preferred pronouns are. You'd be like, what?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's coming. It's real soon. Like in 10, 15 years. And then everyone's going to be, there's going to be a lot of ambiguity. That's a weird word. Ambiguity. How often do you say that word? I'll say ambiguous, but how often do you say ambiguity?
I'd never have said it.
That's a weird one. Right?
I stay away from a lot of big words.
Especially after coffee. Ambiguity? Yeah, but nobody would have ever anticipated that there would be debate about gender.
Oh, my daughters were outside of like one of the progressive bathrooms where it's not men. It's just a bathroom. And my daughters saw her first dick that way. Just pushed open a door because it's no man or woman. And then she's like, ah. And I was like, what is the matter? She goes, I just saw a man's penis. I was like,
why didn't the guy lock the door?
Sometimes you don't. I've done it. You walk in and you're not thinking and you just don't lock the door. But
so was it at any sex bathroom or was it at any gender bathroom?
I don't know. I don't fucking know.
You know what? I was in a restaurant once, and I was waiting for the bathroom. It's a long fucking wait, man. And finally the door opens and a chick comes out. The men's room.
Yeah.
And she looked at me like, I was in the men's room. Like, what if I was in the women's room taking a shit? What if you were in there?
I've done that.
A big steamer.
I did that coming off of a plane from Atlanta.
You went to the women's room?
Ireland to Atlanta, boozing on the flight. This is a while ago. Headsets in, hoodie on, about to take a shit. I'm like, creeping out my pants. And I walk into the bathroom, start shitting. Headset still in, listening to music. Start sweating a little bit because it's hot in there. Take the hoodie off, take the headsets out, and I hear women's voices. And I'm like, oh my God.
No.
I'm shitting in the woman's bathroom.
I did that at the Comedy Store once. I took a leak in the women's room. I didn't realize it when they put those new bathrooms in the side hallway.
Yeah.
Because for a while, it was like a men and women's bathroom, and then they opened up the men's bathroom over there. And I walked in, and there was girls in there. I'm like, yay, hell, it's crazy. We're all in here together. Bye. Isn't it funny that you can be next to people? Here's what's odd about it, right? There's something implied because genitals are involved, right? Like, yeah. You could be standing next to those same people in an elevator. It would be fine. Like, hi, yeah. How you guys doing? Everything's fine. But if you stand next to these same people in a bathroom, you're like, oh, no. Oh, no. Private parts. Naughty parts. Poopy peepee.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's something dirty about – even if everyone is just washing their hands close to each other in the sink, it's like everyone's creeped out. I can't wait to get the fuck out of here. The tension's so thick.
That's
in a bathroom. It's weird.
It's crazy that you can't just shit and piss in front of people.
No, you can't. You can't.
See, we grew up where you could shit in front of dudes. Like, we used to shit in front of dudes. Like, if like, I'm still kind of like this, but, like, if me and you were talking, I'm like, hey, come in, I got to take a shit. I would have shat, and you would have stood there, and I would have finished telling you my story. I bet Joey Diaz is that kind of guy, too.
Oh, Joey's taking horrible shits in front of me.
Yeah, I saw Ari do it online. Do you remember that Jew Clam video?
Yeah, I was there.
Oh, my God. I remember seeing that. I was on the road in a green room, and I saw someone's like, have you seen Ari's asshole? And I was like, I have not.
Yeah, he had a hemorrhoid problem, and that's to put it mildly. This episode is brought to you by Hostage Tape. First of all, what a great name. This is a product that I use, and I started using long before it was an ad. Your sleep game is about to get a whole lot better, kids, because I want to introduce you to Hostage Tape. Put simply, it is tape for your mouth. But you're probably wondering why you should even need that. Well, if you're a mouth breather, if you snore a lot, or if you suffer from sleep apnea, this could make a big difference. This mouth tape can reduce or eliminate snoring and apnea, and at the same time, it'll help filter the air going to your lungs, increase your oxygen uptake, and improve circulation, which will make you feel more energized. It has tons of other benefits, too, like it helps with bad breath, dry mouth, and, of course, better sleep. For you and your partner, don't let bad sleep hold you hostage. Shut your fucking mouth with Hostage Tape. Buy it today and get a special buy two, get one free offer. That's a 90-day supply. Just visit HostageTape.com/Rogan. That's HostageTape.com/Rogan.
He still has a hemorrhoid problem.
Does he still?
Dude, when we were in Atlanta, he was like, how much blood should come be in a toilet after you go to the bathroom?
Oh, a lot.
And but can you imagine Tom's face? You know, Tom's so dry. He's like, none. None.
How much blood? Don't put that up. Don't put that up. Don't put that up. Don't put up.
I was just telling Jamie back, like, before you got here, how important those videos were. All the videos you shot with Red Band and Ari and Joey, the Joey Karate video, all the stuff you guys used to put online, that's so important to where you are today, in my opinion.
What do you mean?
I found that stuff. When YouTube started blowing up, that stuff was in such heavy rotation for comics. Like, you'd look for comics, and you were recognizable because of Fear Factor and News Radio, but I got to those videos, and I probably watched every single one of the videos you guys shot, as did all of us. Tom did, all of us, just because it was like, it was the content we could find. Mm-hmm. That's what we're talking about with Twitch. It's like, get on Twitch now and start uploading content, because one day someone will see it and go, oh, I know that guy. And I really believe that you guys were so ahead of that curve where people were like, I don't even know how to upload a video.
Yeah.
You guys had edited great content. Heckler in Columbus. Ari dealing with a heckler in D.C. The feminist arguing with you. That guy, you choking that guy out the store. Like, those were videos where you're like, I'd watch them 4 or 5 times.
There was a lot of those, but you know what was really good about it was Red Band's editing. He just doesn't like to do that, though. It's too time-consuming, and he's too lazy. He just doesn't like to do videos, but he's really talented. Like, his video editing skills. Like, that Mencia video, that was part of why that video was so popular, because it's a long-ass video, but his editing skills were so good.
What was the music he played?
I forget.
The music was perfect.
Yeah, it was. The whole thing was, you know, he's a really good editor. He's really talented at it, but it's so time-consuming and it drives him nuts that he'd rather just fuck around and do podcasts and have a good time. But when he was doing it, like when we were going on the road together and he was filming a lot of stuff and splicing things together, we'd make a video every couple months or something like that. It was really fun. It was an interesting experiment, you know, just to fuck around.
When I got into vlogging, and Jamie was like right there when I started vlogging, because we were both found Casey Neistat, I think, at the same time. And I got really into vlogging and I loved it, man. I think I maybe did like 40 episodes. and it was just fun. But then I started realizing it was cannibalizing my life to a point where I wasn't living an authentic life at all.
Right.
And I wasn't writing any material. I was just shooting everything. Everything was shot. Like, if I saw you, I'd be like, I wouldn't be like, oh, cool, I get to hang out with Joe. I'd be like, oh, hey, guys, I'm with Joe. You know, and I was
That is the trap that the people fall into. You know, I mean, if you look at some people's Instagram stories, you're like, what are you doing, man? You have a million dots. Your Instagram is like little tiny dots, dot, 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 dot. Like your whole day, you have just a phone in front of you? What, do you just have like constant battery chargers and you're just constantly charging up your phone and filming video? This is crazy.
I do it. This is the way I look at Instagram. I'll do those stories aggressively if I'm running the triathlon, running a marathon, doing a big event.
Yeah. Like,
not to tip the hat or whatever or tell you guys my business plan, but that's what I do. Like, I like to do big things, and then that's how my stories. And then I'll fuck around on the weekend and I'll put up maybe like 3 stories a day, 5 stories a day, and I'll show you my life a little bit. But for the most part, I try to distance myself from it for 2 reasons. Number one, it fucks with my eyesight. Like, if I'm on my phone a lot,
oh, yeah,
my eyes are fucked.
Yeah.
And number two, it does cannibalize your life. But what I want to do, what I think the next level of this business is honestly like a going backwards and doing what you and Red Band were doing with those videos, but getting yourself out of it and having a guy like Red Band, who that's his job.
It's hard, though. See, the thing is, with a guy like Red Band, it's that job is very hard to do. Like, you have to get something. Like, Brian is uniquely talented at that. You know, I think that's like his greatest talent. He's really good at making videos. But he, like I said, he doesn't like to do it. And a lot of people don't like to do it because it's time consuming.
Yeah.
So you could just take stuff and just, you know, cut it and paste it. But he did more than that. He had special effects and music. And, you know, what he was doing was he was figuring out a way to make sometimes mundane situations interesting and interesting situations way more interesting.
Yeah.
It's hard to do. So, like, for you to, like, say, you know, you want to get, you like, you'd have to find a guy. Like, you'd almost, like, have to get Brian to start doing it again.
Jamie and I were talking about this. My next step is doing what you're doing on a much smaller level, like getting an area, getting a space, doing my podcast and my solo podcast out of there, but then creating content.
What is your solo podcast? You have a solo one as well?
Yeah, I do a solo podcast.
Just talk to yourself?
No, it's called Open Tabs. So I go throughout on the weekend, like when I'm normally killing time looking on the internet, and I just leave all those tabs open on Safari, and then I go in and I just go through and close them and tell you what they are and show you the video I was watching.
Oh,
it's a lot of videos of you and all my friends, because I watch all my friends do shit. Like, if Bill Burr kills it on some interview, I show that. Or if you a lot of them are like the interviews you have with these guys like David Attia and Cam Haynes. Cam Haynes is like all those like really inspirational guys. I'll pull up videos of them, and then I'll get obsessed with Flash Floods. And fucking
Flash Floods are scary,
dude. There's this guy, no joke, like, I think I'm a good comic, this guy's better at what he does, but he tracks flash floods, and he's like on camera, like, okay, I'm in this valley, see this cloud over there, it's raining over there, it should be to us in 15 minutes, all right, we're gonna stay with it. And this guy finds a plot of land where the flash flood will run, and he can chase it and almost follow it, hop up on the bank, and then cut a corner and get in front of it again. This guy's so good at fucking following flash floods. There's this girl. This is what I find on the internet, because, like, I get online. There's this girl, Kimmy Warner, okay? This girl is the best. I'm obsessed with spearfishing right now. And I've never...
Spearfishing?
Never done it in my life. I'm obsessed with spear... I watch spearfishing videos, Joe, maybe 8 hours a day.
What?
Dude, like, when I'm in bed, and you know when you're killing time... Kimmy Warner. Pull up Kimmy Warner. This woman is fucking amazing. This is a picture of her swimming with a great white shark.
Dude, okay? I've got a spearfishing woman coming on next week.
Who?
Valentine Thomas.
I don't know her. I'm Googling the fuck out of her.
Google Valentine Thomas. She's coming on next week. She was a lawyer who quit her gig and became active on social media, spear fisherman.
Oh, she's beautiful. Where's she out of? The Keys?
She's in Florida somewhere,
yeah,
I believe.
Yeah. On the west coast of Florida is a big spearfishing community, shooting a lot of hoghead groupers. By the way, this is the way I talk about something I've never fucking done.
We should do it.
I'm in.
Let's do it. I want to go spearfishing. Apparently, it's like hunting underwater.
Dude, and see, now are you ready for this? This is what is wrong with me, is that I've watched so much spearfishing, I'm going to talk about it intimately. The thing about shooting out on the west coast of Florida is they use a lot of Hawaiian slings, all right? Very different than the average spearfishing.
What's a Hawaiian sling?
I'm glad you asked, Joe. It's, it's just got two rubber bands, and you just go, and then
you grab it. Yeah, it's like a rubber band with a pointy stick.
But
right?
Like when Kimmy Werner goes, she's got like string. Like she'll shoot a tuna, and it'll take off, and she'll hold on and ride with it.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. It's,
you ride the tuna.
I think it's just based on the depths of where you hunt. So when you hunt over on the West Coast, and now I'm talking out of my ass, do not listen to anything I say, anybody. But it's a lot of shallower shoots. It's like 30 feet, a lot of reef shoots. Out in Hawaii, Kimmy Werner goes down to like 100 feet and chills.
Whoa.
And just chills. And
100 feet is 100 deep.
100 feet. Me and you would be good in the Bahamas.
Yeah, Bahamas.
I could do Bahamas.
6 feet.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at.
Just over your head.
Where you can still sand?
Get down to 9 if you're getting crazy. Get down to 9, you can push off the bottom and pop back up again.
Bro, I'm obsessed with spearfishing. It's such it's such a cool way to live your life.
Aubrey's done a bunch of it. Yeah, I would love to try it. It looks like fun. She invited me, Valentine invited me to go next week, but I don't have the time. She's going to go to San Diego. They're going to go tuna spearfishing.
Really?
See, in San Diego.
The Pacific Ocean spearfishing, is a little bit of a sport. Like, because you got to really know how to hold your breath for a long time.
It's different?
I think so. I think only because of depths. Like, everything's pretty shallow out on the West Coast.
On the East Coast.
Or on the East Coast. Everything's pretty shallow. All the keys, you're doing like 15 feet.
Mm.
15, 20 feet tops. But on the West Coast, everything is a tad bit deeper.
Huh.
At least from what I've been watching with Kimmy Werner. Go to Kimmy Werner, and there's a video of her, no shit, hanging out at 100 feet just with a spear. Just
waiting?
Yeah, she's got 4.5 minutes to kill. Why not?
4.5 minutes, she's holding her breath?
She can hold her breath.
So she's free diving.
Oh,
no tanks.
No tanks.
Oh, Christ.
All free diving. In like camouflage shit. Not afraid of sharks. Love sharks.
Well, you know what a hex suit is? You ever heard of a hex suit?
Uh-uh.
They got this suit called HECS. It's like a suit that it's based on something. I think it's called the Faraday cage. And what it does is it hides your electrical signal. And one of the things about fish is that fish, apparently they read your electrical signal. There's certain machines that like you could hover your hand over them and it'll register that an electrical signal is coming off of your body. But then when you put this hex suit on, you run your hand over the same exact machine and it shows nothing.
Really?
Yeah. So this suit is something that it's very controversial in the hunting community because some people don't believe it really works because there's no real clear absolute studies that it works on animals, but there are clear studies that it shields your body's electrical signal. But it works pretty unequivocally on fish. On fish, it's crazy. You gotta pull up hex suit, HECS suit video fish.
So you basically roll into the water like Predator?
You put gloves on, you put a suit on, and they can't see you. Like, they, for whatever reason, you can get right up to them. It's fucking weird, man.
But
you can get right up to fish, right up to, like, corals. They get right up to coral reefs. See, now, here's the thing. I don't know how much of this would happen exactly the same way if this guy wasn't wearing this suit. Because I don't really have that information.
Yeah.
But I do know that people that spearfish and people that like are involved with underwater diving and shit, they swear by these things. They say it absolutely works. And they had it on Shark Week too. They were using it on Shark Week. There's something
amazing
about those suits. Yeah.
Ari and I were I was going to go out to the Great Barrier Reef with Ari. If Tom was going out there at the same time, we're all three going to go dive at the Great Barrier Reef.
Whoa.
Do a liveaboard. Ari and I have been talking back and forth about finding a place to do a liveaboard. And
a
go,
liveaboard?
Yeah, like
a boat.
Where you can stay for like 4 days, you do two dives a day. Do
damn.
Like, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's an adventure.
Ari's all about living life. And if I can fold that into my family and let my wife understand that, like, you know, once a quarter I got to do something crazy, you know, then, and then my wife's like, she's cool with it. We talked to, what's the ultra marathon runner that you had on?
Courtney DeWalter?
Nope.
Zach
Bitter.
Zach Bitter.
Zach Bitter, me and Ari were going to find an international marathon to do together. like find an international really
26
badass.
Mile, yeah, a regular marathon,
yeah,
not like one of those ultras.
That's
breaking down your liver where you piss Diet Coke,
man.
Yeah,
let me tell you something. I've always had respect for Cam. Never anything shy of that. But when you run a marathon, the respect you have for Cam Haynes and guys like David Goggins, it enters a new stratosphere.
Yeah, I can only imagine.
You're like, whoa. Like when David Goggins says, embrace the hate, embrace the suck, just decide not to quit. That's where my brain, when I went to that marathon, I was like, decide not to quit. And at 22 miles, both my calves just seized up. My quads went into my legs, and the woman in front of me shit her pants. And I was like,
you washed her shit her pants?
I washed her shit her pants. A grown woman, like an executive, shit her pants, went down one leg and up her ass.
Whoa.
And I went.
Did she stop?
Nope. She kept going.
Gangster.
But
how bad did it smell?
I that's when I started running past her. I was like, fuck this bitch. I was like, please let her be an exec from FX or something, being like, oh, hey.
That would be hilarious.
But those guys, like when I watch Cam's videos now of him running in the afternoon and running, I think he's doing a marathon a day.
Yeah.
The speed he's running and the way he's talking as he's running is inspirational beyond measure. For a guy like me where I go, I want to get there. Like I want to get like – he's fucking. I can't put it into words.
Yeah, he's an animal, and he works a full time job.
That's really what blows crazy. Me away.
Yeah, are you not drinking?
No.
For how long?
I just haven't been.
For how long?
Not. I mean, I will. But
what about on stage?
No. I mean, I'll take a drink with me at the end of the night. Like when I tell the machine story on the second show, I'll have that drink.
That's it.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Nothing, man.
Cleaning it up.
No, I'm just. I don't know. I don't know.
Growing up?
No, I know I still party, but like, yeah, like if I saw you at the store tonight, I still party and smoke, okay. And but I just, I don't know. This is what sucks about being me is like people to go, what's going on? Are you sick? Is something going on? You're like, no, just, I'm also regular.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I did the triathlon and I didn't drink leading up to it and I did it and I felt really good. I just felt really good and I thought, and you know, when you have friends that I'm 45, and so you start seeing friends that lifestyle starts to affect in different ways, and you go, okay, I don't ever want to quit drinking. I don't ever want to quit smoking weed. I don't ever want to go with Ari and run a marathon and then not do mushrooms with him in Buenos Aires. I want that to be a part of my life, but I can't have that if I'm going at the pace I'm going at. Like I can't have both.
Well, you started to rely on your body a lot more. Like what you're doing with all this running and, you know, these, what was that one that you did where you had to do all the obstacle courses
Spartan
and shit? Spartan race. Doing a triathlon. You're relying on your body.
Yeah.
Like part of your recreation now is relying on your endurance. And when you're doing that and you're drinking at the same time, you're just shooting yourself in the foot.
Yeah. I mean, I still, like I said, like we did the Spartan race and right after you sit up in the stands, everyone has some beers.
Yeah,
it's great.
Yeah, a couple of beers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe a hit of a vape pen and then you just go home and you get a good night's sleep. But you're right. I think for me, training for the triathlon was just, I couldn't do both. Yeah. I just was not able to do both. And then when I got done, I just, you know, I think a lot of, like I was thinking about last night, I didn't drink last night, obviously. And I was like, I was in the shower today. I had a really hard time sleeping last night. I was up all night. I've just been doing a lot of press. And so I think you empty your serotonin because you're giving everyone everything.
Yeah.
And I was like, and I was up all night with like a little bit of panic attacks. And I definitely would have drank last night.
When you get a panic attack, like, what does that mean? Like, what happens?
For me, you kind of get blinders on. And for me personally, I will start saying the same phrase over and over in my head again where I can't get it out.
Like what?
Like my brain will go, satellite of love, satellite of love, satellite of love, satellite. And then I'll start going, like, last night, I had a phrase going through my head, and I was like, fuck, is the alarm on? Is the alarm on? And I get up, and I go check the alarm. And then I get in bed, and I go, I should check, make sure all the doors are locked. And then I go check all the doors. And then I get up, and I go, did I lock the man cave? I got to get up, and I lock the man cave. Now, normally, that's where I will start. Like, if I have a few drinks, that does not happen.
You know what's weird?
What?
Jamie was talking about this, too. It's at night.
Yeah.
At night when you get weirded out. It's like when you're getting ready to shut off. It's like, can I shut the body off yet? Is everything cool?
I think meditation might help me because I can't just, I can't shut my brain off. And then I'm like, and then I go.
You should get a tank for your man cave.
That would take up all of my man cave, Joe.
How big is your man cave?
It's like
it's like an office, right?
It's like half of this, probably.
Yeah. You could fit a tank in there.
It would be really big in my man cave.
It'll be really big in there. But you could stuff it in there. You don't have to get one that big. They'll have a, they have a smaller one. They have like one that's like 6x7 or 4x7? 4x7?
See, I would rather, probably I'd rather sauna. I love sauna. I love those infrared saunas. I love those.
Sauna's great too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
I was thinking about it. Thinking about it this morning in the shower, and I was like, you know what, man? The Sober October we did was so helpful because I learned how to cope and go to bed with nothing.
Yeah.
And like with nothing. No NyQuil, no nothing. It was super helpful. And then I learned little tricks like drinking on planes. I still may have a few drinks before I get on a plane or a couple drinks on the plane. But the difference is if it's an early morning flight, I don't need a drink to get on the plane. Yeah. I don't need it.
Right.
For ways I just said, I just got to do it, you know?
It was helpful for me, too. You know what's really interesting is it made me realize what's happening to your dreams when you're smoking pot all the time. Because as soon as you stop smoking pot, and then your dreams become super vivid, like really vivid, like excruciatingly vivid, strange, bizarre. You're like, oh, what am I doing to myself with the weed all the time?
Yeah.
Like, that's probably not good for my dreams.
I want those dreams.
The vivid ones?
The crazy ones?
You should take Alpha Brain.
I told you.
Before you go to bed?
I took out, my wife made me stop. Because I was a lunatic on Alpha Brain. Because I could feel it really immediately.
If you take it before, like, I take a double dose. So, like, if I'm, like, these packets, you're supposed to take one packet. Yeah. I would take two of these packets with some water before I go to bed. And then, you know, like, maybe an hour before you go to bed. And with no pot and Alpha Brain, you will have lucid, intense fucking dreams. Like, they're intense. They're durable. Like, you realize you're a dream, and they don't wake up. Like, they get lucid, and you're in the middle of them. You know, the way I describe lucid dreams, like, lucid dreams are like a delicate bubble that a kid would blow, like, and you can kind of almost catch it on your hand, and then pop, it pops. These were like basketballs. Like, they weren't popping.
Yeah.
Like, it'd be in the middle of the dream, like, oh, I'm in a dream. Okay, now we're in a dream. Let's just keep going. And it wouldn't knock me out of the dream by recognizing that I was in a dream, which ordinarily would immediately do it. Ordinarily, I'd be like, oh, my God, I'm dreaming. Well, I'm waking up.
Yeah.
And then you just wake up.
I could keep myself in that lucid dream state for a long time. I lucid dream naturally, and I showed to Comedy Central based on my dreams. I have fucking insane dreams.
You should try. Do you know what paracetam is? Uh-uh. You ever heard of that stuff? It's another nootropic. It's a real potent. One of the interesting things about nootropics is there's a ton of them. There's a lot of different ones. One of them they found recently is creatine. They found that creatine boosts your mental performance. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Creatine's got a lot of benefits, man. Because you think about it, right? Creatine makes your body retain more water as well, right? It's one of the things people don't like about it. Kind of gives you like a chubby face, like you get a little bloated on it. But what that's doing is it's just retaining more water, right? But if you have more water, it also makes you stronger. Like it's proven, like over time, taking creatine as a supplement, it's very effective. It really does make you stronger. It makes you bigger. So you got to think like all that is like all this tissue and all this water, it's like it's probably just everything's healthier, right? And probably the flow of everything's healthier too, the conductivity of it all. Obviously, I'm not a scientist.
Yeah.
But I would think that all that makes sense. Like your brain works terrible when it's dehydrated. Like if you ever been dehydrated and try to think, it's your brain is so weak. It's incredible how much dehydration affects the way your brain performs. But on the other side, it should be that if you're really well hydrated, your brain would probably work better. And it only makes sense.
It's amazing how important water is.
Oh, fuck, man. It's everything.
I got this nutritionist when I started doing the triathlon. Like, Men's Health covered it. Like, they're doing a documentary on it.
What are they doing with you?
The whole triathlon. They hit me up, and they're like, man, this guy Connor Reed, really cool guy. He's like, he's just a fan of what we do. And he's like, man, I love Sober October. I love you and Tommy's Bets. You know, like, and there's a lot of people as bizarre as this sounds, whatever we decided to do with these competitions, that got inspired and lost a ton of weight. And
yeah, I've seen a lot of that. It's awesome.
It's been amazing, man.
Like, it has been.
And like, guys are hit me up and they're like, I'm running my first marathon. I'm running my first Spartan race. Me and my buddies are doing it when you're in Columbus. Can you come hang out with us? And it really is. I know Tom and I have talked about it a lot. It just definitely was not our intention. Like, we just wanted to, we were fucking around. And then when we all did Sober October, there are people that came up to me at the triathlon. This guy, Willie Nelson's his name. And he's like, bro. He's like, holy shit, the machine. I did fucking Sober October with you guys. I was like, for real? He's like, dude, no booze, no drugs. Can you fucking believe it? And I'm like, yeah, I'm right. Like, we shared the same month.
I'm doing it again.
I'll do it again.
I'm going to do it every October. I'm just going to make it a thing.
Yeah.
But we should do something else, too. Like, right now, it's almost September. What is it, like the 20th or something? What is it? 23rd? That's not a lot of time. We basically have a month to figure it out.
Like, what do you mean, add another thing inside Sober October?
Yeah, I mean, we could be sober, and we could do the yoga classes. We could do it again.
You're not getting Tom to do those fucking yoga classes again.
Fuck, man, those are amazing for you. That was also amazing. I did 9 in a row. I did 9 days in a row just to whack it out.
Yeah.
And when I did that, I was like, it's amazing, like, if you just know that you have to do it, you just do it.
Yeah.
But if you don't know you have to do it, you find all sorts of reasons to not do it. Like, I'll just go lift weights. I'll just go for a run. I'll just go do this. But if, like, I have to get 7 more of these fucking things in the next 14 days, I'll just do them right now.
Yeah. You know what was cool about them is this sounds silly, but now I have hot yoga in my utility belt worth of workouts. Where I go, sometimes I'll go like, I'll come off the road, and I'll be like, God, man, maybe I booze that weekend. I'll be like, Monday, I'm doing a hot yoga. Mm-hmm. And I'll go do a hot yoga, and I know how the poses. I'm not embarrassed. I know I've got the mat. Like, doing your first hot yoga is embarrassing.
A little bit.
But when you go back in it, and you do it again, and you just pour sweat, and you're like, shit, I'm coming back tomorrow. And then, of course, you don't, but...
It's courageous when you see people going to those classes that are like, really obese,
yeah.
And they just take that risk of being almost naked in front of all these people. You got shorts on and shit, and some lady just did it the other day, her first class, and I was like, that lady obviously, she's not physically fit, she's not that active, this is probably like super nerve-wracking for her to do. She took a ballsy chance. It's tough to do anything. It's tough to, you know, it's tough to fucking take a kettlebell class. It's tough. You go in there. It's weird. You get weirded out.
When I started the training and I had to go to a pool and swim and get in a Speedo. Now, I wear Speedos all the time. But for real to wear one? Like, for real?
Yeah, for real, for real.
Like,
why do you have to wear one? Why is it that much better than shorts?
Oh, my God. The drag is like, you glide like a fucking dolphin.
Really?
You ever jack off with too much lotion and you're like, I don't even feel it. I need to dry some of this off.
Wow.
That's a bad example, but it's super specific to me. But yeah.
I swam in the ocean recently. I was in Italy last week, and I was swimming in the ocean. I was realizing, like, wow, it's so much easier to swim in the ocean.
Oh, yeah, salt water.
You float.
Yeah.
It's like way easier.
Yeah.
It's not a little easier. It's like way easier.
Open water swimming in salt water in like the Malibu triathlon's coming up. That one's it's tough. It's a half mile swim, but you're in a wetsuit and you're buoyant and you're in the salt water.
You're also swimming near great white sharks.
Yeah, I'm doing Malibu in a year.
Great white sharks, they're everywhere around.
Yeah, but
Malibu.
When you're in a pack like that.
Oh well, what's the odds of you get bitten?
Just get into the center.
Yeah, get into the center, and that's where they go, right for the middle.
Yeah, just fucking shoot up. Just
that movie, The Meg, is supposed to be one of the worst movies of all time.
For real?
Have you seen that movie?
They say it's doing great at the box office.
Of course it is. Everyone's an idiot. It's supposed to be so bad. It's a big shark that just fucking nobody saw before. Oh, here it is.
It's doing as good as Crazy Rich Asians.
Oh, Crazy Rich Asians, killing it.
Oh, good. Is it?
It's killing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hear see
it's
that.
Hilarious.
I want to see it.
The Meg. What's it got? 91% like this movie. 47% Rotten Tomatoes. 6.2 on IMDb. That's not bad. Like, what is the worst received movie recently? There's been some really, really bad ones, right?
Oh, I got this. I could come up with this because there was one that came out recently and everyone trashed it. No, well, I'm not going to say. No, no, no.
That Gotti movie didn't get like zero.
Oh, the Gotti movie. That's it. Yeah, the Gotti movie. He's writing it down. Let's see here.
I just, a movie I liked and everyone trashed.
Oh. Yeah. Got to leave that one alone. Burn that paper. Yeah. Yeah. What are you going to do? It's fucking, that's a business I don't want to get into.
I don't ever want to do that.
I see Tom doing it now. He's doing some movies. I'm like, yeah, good luck. You know, it's nice to see him blowing up, but that movie thing is a trap. You get on those sets for 16 hours a day and everyone's depressed. Everyone's tired and everyone's on antidepressants. Fucking everyone. Everyone.
Really?
Oh my God. You ever been on a movie set? You talk to actors about what they're on? Well, you know, my Wellbutrin wasn't doing it for me, so I got on Lexapro, and I'm on Zoloft, and I really find it just, it's really balancing me out, and I started taking this, and I started taking that, and Xanax a little here, and a little there, like, whoa, everyone is on something.
Dude, fuck that. You go to Colombia for 8 weeks, and you live in Colombia, and do the, I know Mark Wahlberg did that Mile 22. He just lived in Colombia for 8 weeks. Fuck that. I'd much rather just do stand-up.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind doing, I'm not even joking. I would, my dream, now my dream's doing what I'm doing right now. Like, I like to expand that. If I could do my own thing and expand that, that's my goal.
Mm.
But if you said part of the business, easily like a news radio, like an ensemble cast.
That was hard too, man.
I would love a multicam.
Well, it's fun if everybody gets along, but you got to rely on all those other people to keep their shit together. And, you know, it goes sideways.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, sometimes the scripts don't work. And sometimes when the show's not doing well, then you have executives that chime in. I honestly think that, like, what you're doing with, like, Something's Burning,
yeah,
like that kind of shit, that's way better, man. Like, the thing you're doing with All Things Comedy, like this cooking show.
Yeah.
That kind of fun shit where there's no real bosses is way better for a guy like you or a guy like me. Like,
I agree.
A podcast, same kind of thing. You're never going to be able to be really authentically yourself with all these executives and producers and network notes and all that shit. They don't know what the fuck they're doing, man. That they just don't. Occasionally, you'll get good advice. But when something gets through with that sort of system and becomes a hit, it's almost by luck. It's almost like, wow, what are the odds? It's like a salmon making its way up a river.
Yeah.
Like, why would it go upriver? The fuck are you doing? This is a terrible way to go. You got to jump over a waterfall? That is so stupid.
Makes no sense.
It's so dumb.
Yeah.
But the one that makes it and spawns, like, look, this is our system. It works. Like, okay, I guess this is it. But it's almost like that. It's like you're doing something that's, like, so counterintuitive. You're doing something creative, and you're being judged and ordered around by people who have zero creativity. They're not funny.
Yeah.
If they were funny, they'd be comedians. They're not funny. But yet they're telling you what to do. And then you have to think about their notes, and you got to bring in the gay roommate and the fucking the black neighbor and the hot chick down the street that everybody wants to fuck and everyone's like tripping over.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't, no thanks, man.
So when we went and did that first Something's Burning, it's me, Bill, and Tom, and I walked on set and I said, I'm super difficult to work with. Just want everyone to know that. Don't anyone stop me. Don't anyone do anything. I'll let you know when we start, and I'll let you know when we're done. And they're like, okay. I said, just cover everything. Don't ever ask me to stop and do anything. Just cover everything.
That's a problem. When they go, stop. We're going to rewind. Say that again. What?
Yep.
No, get a camera on me and stay out of the picture. Just leave me alone.
Yep.
Like, they don't understand that every time you break that momentum, now I'm thinking about you, and I'm thinking about that camera, and I have to reset again.
Yeah. Just, and we did it. We did, me and Tom and Bill did that first one, just one take. I think both Tom and Bill were like, I got 45 minutes. I was like, perfect. We got it all. They got up. I think they aired almost all of it. And then everyone loved it. And then Dalia and Bobby Lee came in. Same thing. I was like, no one say a thing. Dude, the best ones, Schaub and Brian Callen, to me, are my favorite. Because you see Brendan Schaub in a he is so fucking funny in that.
He's a very funny dude.
He is so fucking funny in that. That like our
What'd you guys cook?
Oh my God, Joe. We cooked crab, but we had to kill them on air, and you have to kill them in a humane way.
What?
Yeah, in order to do it, you have to kill them in a humane way.
What do you mean, in order to do it?
In order to kill a crab legally, especially on YouTube. You got to kill it in a humane way.
What?
Yeah. So you got to, it's got to be within 6 seconds.
Dude, I shot an elk with a bow and arrow on YouTube. You can go watch, you can watch an elk get shot through the heart with a bow and arrow.
Don't even.
You have to be careful with a crab.
All I know is that the one note we got was.
Didn't even have senses.
Well, Brian Callen took care of all the killing.
Did he?
He was so fucking funny.
How'd he kill it?
As you start by lifting up their dick and putting
Whoa, they have a dick?
I think so. I think that's what it is. And you jam it in. And then
you
once
jam it in. What is it?
The knife.
Oh, well, what the fuck? How about you bring that up?
Yeah.
Lift up their dick and you jam it in. I'm thinking you're jamming their dick in. Where are you putting it?
No, you take the knife, you lay the crab on its
you
back.
You fuck them to death, bro.
You lift up the dick, you pop the knife in, and then you've got to hit the other side of it within like 6 seconds, and that's a humane death for the crab. Otherwise, they're suffering. So I show that to Brendan, and Brendan's like, no, bro, I'm definitely not fucking doing this. And Brian just goes, I'll do it. And literally, like, the Barbara Seville goes through and kills 20 fucking crabs like this. I made them Chiappino. And neither of them thought they'd like it, and they loved it.
What's Chiappino? That's like a soup?
It's like a, yeah, it's like a, here, watch Brian, watch soup? Fucking Brian. He's
definitely fucking dead. He's cut in half. And then
Wait a minute. How is this, why is that humane? Like, what a weird thing. Like, you have to kill them humanely, as opposed to boiling them alive. Is that the idea?
Yes, I guess. I'm not really
certain. Boil them alive? But like with lobsters, they always boil them alive.
Yeah.
And they'll tell you you're supposed to boil them alive. But I'm always like, well, what do you mean supposed to? Like, says who? Like, what happens if you don't boil them alive? Like, what magic doesn't, you know, what magic leaves their body where they don't taste as good if you don't boil them alive?
Yeah, I don't know about that.
How come you can't just cut their fucking head off and then they're dead and then you throw them in the boiling water? Like, what's happening here?
Why do they need to be kept alive?
That's well, you want them to be fresh, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's a big difference in seafood. Seafood and freshness, those that's huge. Like, you don't see dry-aged seafood, you know? Like, if you get a piece of beef from a restaurant, like a steak, a lot of times it's aged because the bacteria on the meat actually starts to break it down, and it makes it more tender, and it actually gives it a lot of that mold that they cut off of it. You ever see dry-aged beef before they slice it up?
No.
Oh, ready? Okay, show him.
Are you serious?
Yeah. There's a guy that I follow on Instagram that was doing something insane. Like, I think they had like a 200-day dry-aged beef, which is just like, even hearing about that, you're like, what in the hell
Whoa,
are you doing?
That's what it looks like?
Yes, that's what dry-aged beef looks like. It looks like it's rotten, like rotten meat. And you lose some of the meat. I mean, it's really wasteful in a way. Because the outside edge, that black shit, they cut all that off.
So you're losing.
See if you find a video, Jamie, of trimming. Just Google trimming dry-aged beef and look up YouTube.
Were you the guy that turned me on to the guy that had his own fridge and was doing it in his own fridge in his garage?
Oh, yeah. I know a bunch of guys who do that. Yeah.
It's like I think he was doing it with elk, dry-aging elk maybe.
Yeah. I know quite a few guys do that. So this is dry-aged meat. So look at that.
Oh, wow.
Takes the outside. Look, it looks rotten, man. And he takes the outside, and you cut into it, and then I guess he's going to cut all the fat off, and he's going to turn it into steaks. And what is he going to do with all that fat? That's interesting. He's throwing it in the garbage. So this fat, is he throwing that away?
So he's just got to...
It seems like he's throwing that fat away.
Oh, so he keeps a lot of the fat on, and the fat on top...
Yeah.
Is dry aged. So he's not losing any beef on top. He's just losing the sides.
Well, yeah, you're losing the outside edges in this particular cut. But on some steaks, you know, it depends on how long he's dry aging it, too. Like when some people go really ham with that shit, they'll, you know, like I said, they'll dry age for hundreds of days. There's a lot of experimental stuff they're doing now where, let me find this dude on Instagram.
Do you do that with elk?
No, I don't. No.
I got to get you and Cam on Something's Burning.
Yeah, we'll do it.
I would love that.
Cam can't cook, though. You know, Dudley can. Dudley can cook his ass off.
I'm the cook. I'll cook for you guys.
Yeah, you know, do you know how to cook?
Yeah, I know how to reverse sear.
But have you ever fucked around with wild game? I'll give you some today. And you could fuck around with it, and then if you get it right, you know, we'll figure out a way to do it. I'll give you some recipes and stuff. But it's not that difficult, but it is... It's more tricky than beef. Beef is hard to fuck up, especially like fatty beef, because there's so much moisture, you know. Whereas elk is basically you're basically eating a bodybuilder.
Yeah,
you're eating an athlete, you know, and it's just a richer, darker meat and has very little fat in it. But if you do it right, it's fantastic. Have you had it before?
I've had your ground elk.
That's good. But that's hard to, like, the right way to do it is to do an elk steak. I got to fucking set up that goddamn grill out here, but we don't know how to have proper ventilation. I got one of those Yoder pellet grills in the back there, but we don't know how to get the proper ventilation. We might need to get some sort of a permit, put, like, a vent like they would do with a kitchen. God damn it, I can't find this, guys.
Is it this one?
No, Rare Gourmet Meats. Ooh, what does he got going on?
Bunch of stuff.
Custom See if you find, like, just Google, try 500-day dry-aged beef on YouTube.
Holy shit.
Yeah. These guys don't fuck around.
Can I tell you one of the coolest things you turned me on to?
What?
Fucking Adam Graintree.
Oh, he's an animal.
Dude, his Insta stories, like, I get bummed when I skip them. And when he's on one of those epic hunts...
Yeah, no, he does not fuck around, dude. That guy, he goes out by himself.
By himself?
Months at a time. Extreme age steak, what is it saying there? 420 days?
Yeah, this one's 400 on this one.
Oh, go to 400. Let's see what that looks like. It probably looks terrible when they start cutting it up. See, back it up a little bit so we can
see.
Oh my
God, I just saw this online the other day. Like, I saw this and I didn't click on it.
So it's real weird, man. I mean, you're basically letting it rot. And you're relying on the bacteria to not completely flourish. Like, you have to have a certain temperature. I think they keep it somewhere around, like, 40 degrees or something like that. And it's dry. Like, look at that. That looks terrible. That looks like a rotten piece of meat.
But you're supposed to... He's going to eat that?
Yeah, they're going to eat the shit out of it. Look at that. That is so weird, dude. That's so weird. It doesn't even look red anymore. I mean, it's white, and I think that's Wagyu. How do you say it?
Wagyu.
Wagyu. Wagyu. What's the other word for that? There's another word. Oh, Kobe. Yeah.
Is he eating it
so,
raw?
Keep it going.
Oh, sorry, I put the wrong one.
So he's going to sear it, I guess. Yeah. And then throw some thyme. Oh, and then he's going to sous vide. Ah, have you ever sous vide?
I have. It takes forever to sous vide eggs.
Does it?
Like an hour.
Really?
For soft-boiled eggs? Yeah, I love soft-boiled eggs.
Sous vide is interesting, man, because you could have something and cook it, like, say, at 125 degrees, which is, like, where you want your steak to be, and you could have it in there for hours.
Yeah, what you do is you take your steaks, and you got to vacuum seal them, sous vide them, and then you can just let them sit. You're not going to overcook them, and then sear them. Sear them in some butter and garlic.
Yeah, or with a blowtorch. I do a blowtorch sometimes.
Wow.
Yeah. They have sous vide torches. Look at that. That guy's got the butter and the thyme. Oh, sweet baby.
Oh, Jesus.
What are you doing here, you fuck?
Look at him with his camera.
Slicing it open. That's 400-day dry-aged meat. Look at him. He's having a mouthgasm. Oh, foodies are such dorks. They just get so into it. They just get so into it, man.
When you go travel, when you go to, like, Thailand and stuff, do you get foodie and go in and try to find something dangerous and crazy, or do you just pretty much stay?
I didn't eat bugs, but I ate some really hot food.
Yeah?
Yeah, no bugs. They try to serve me bugs. I'm like, bitch, I hosted Fear Factor for 6 years. Get that shit out of my face.
You're the wrong guy.
Yeah. I'm just not interested in your bugs. Not only that, it doesn't gross me out at all. Like, nothing grosses me out. Like, eating bugs or anything. Throw up.
I remember your wife threw up in her car one time. I think I came over there, and you were cleaning out your wife's car. I said, what are you doing? You were like, oh, my wife threw up all over her car, one of those green drinks. And I was like, like, if you bring up, like, Segura brought up throwing up the other day, just brought up throwing up, and I started gagging on his podcast.
Yeah, I'm immune. I saw so many people throw up. I've seen hundreds of people throw up right in front of me, and I had to talk to them while they were puking. And this is a learned skill. Because when I first started doing the show, I would gag when I would see other people do it. I'd be like, bleh.
Yeah.
But then after a while, it just went away. Like, that part of me is dead. It's dead. So when my wife threw up in her car, I was like, I'll clean it. I don't give a fuck.
That's
fine. I was just cleaning it.
I cannot do that. I can't even, when my kids throw up, I'm like, I'm sorry, you're on your own.
Yeah, I clean up all the puke. If my kids puke, I am the designated puke cleaner.
Oh.
100% of the time. 100% of the time. Someone throws up in the bed or somewhere else, I clean it up.
Dude, I came back from Utah one time, and I was firing hot, and I'd had a crazy weekend, and I just wasn't feeling right. And we went and ate a big dinner, and I don't feel good. I'm in bed. I'm in a robe. I'm in a Yankees robe. And I get up and I'm like, I'm not feeling good. And I go into the bathroom and I go to shit, but I start throwing up before I can shit. And I sit in the robe and I shit in the robe and throw up on my lap. And my wife's a thug. She went, we got this. Let's get you in the shower. I'll take care of it.
That's a good woman right there.
Yeah.
That's a good woman right there. Yeah, man. I like literally, unless I'm out of town, my wife does not clean up puke. She would tell me that the kid puked and not clean it up.
Really?
Yeah, because she'll start throwing up, and I won't at all.
Does she? She takes care of the chickens, though.
Yeah, sometimes. You know, we have a guy that we hire too that will take care of the chickens sometimes, like especially when we're not there.
Yeah,
he'll handle certain things. Like you have to. Chickens are a little bit of effort. You know, you got to clean up the cage. You got to collect the eggs every day. We had some squirrels stealing eggs. We had a real issue with that.
I got a squirrel that I have to hose out of our chicken coop.
Yeah. Well. Marshall took care of that. Marshall fucks up squirrels, dude. Marshall is the sweetest dog of all time. Unless you're a squirrel, then he's the devil. I mean, I never seen a dog so determined to kill a squirrel. It's crazy. He goes out now and he looks for them. He runs to the chicken coop, and then he circles the chicken coop, looking to see where these motherfuckers are getting in, see if anybody's around there, see if anybody's slipping. But I was on the road. My wife sent me a picture of Marshall with a squirrel in his mouth, and she's so happy because she doesn't like squirrels because squirrels are fucking up all the they steal all the chicken food.
Yeah.
I like squirrels. I think they're cute. So, like, for me, I'm like, so what? They steal the chicken food. Make more chicken food. But then they start stealing the eggs. And I was like, oh, you bitches are pushing it. That shit doesn't happen. You can't steal my food. That's my food. You can't steal the eggs. Let me find this fucking.
Our chickens are family members.
Yeah, they are, right?
Yeah. Well, like cute. I came home when it was like, you remember when it was like 120 and all the trees were dying?
Yeah.
And I walked in and Leanne had the chickens in the house. She's like, they can't be out there. It's too fucking hot.
Yeah, but they do. They have to be out there.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. He's all happy.
This is ingrained in his DNA.
Oh, 100%.
And his mouth is soft. So he doesn't like, he's like, I want to bring it back to you fully intact so that you can't. So that if you need this, is that blood on his chest?
Yeah. Yeah, that's blood. Yeah, well, he brings things to you always because he's a retriever. So, like, he has a little box of stuffed toys that he has in the house. And he's the only dog that I've ever had that doesn't mangle every toy you give him. Because I've had pit bulls and mastiffs. And you give them a toy and they just start tearing them apart. He just carries them around. He carries him around. He brings to you. So, like, when I see him in the morning, I'm like, good morning, sir. Good morning. And he's wagging his tail, happy. And the first thing he does is run over to his pile of toys, grabs one, and comes over with it.
Brings you a present.
Yeah. Well, he has it in his mouth. He's a retriever. Like, if you see retrievers running, a lot of times they're carrying their leash in their mouth as they're running. They love to hold on to things in their mouth. Weird.
Does he dive in underwater?
Oh, he fucking swims like a motherfucker, dude.
Dude.
That dog is always in the water. He will dive from the deep end of the pool. Like, if the kids are playing in the pool, I'll let him out the door. He runs to the pool, stands on the edge, and then leaps into the water and splashes.
How?
Fucking loves it.
Does he dive underwater, though?
A little bit.
That's what we used to have. I used to have a black lab. And you could throw one of those rings underwater, and she'd dive to the bottom, grab it, and pull it up.
Oh, he doesn't do that.
Oh, I guarantee you he will. I guarantee you he will.
I bet he would if I taught him how to do it, but he swims like crazy.
It's instinctual, those fucking dogs. My bull mastiff, I cannot get her in the pool.
Really?
She looks at me like you're trying to pitch anal sex to your wife. She's like, come on.
For real.
We both know how this is going to go. No one's going to be happy.
Yeah, Johnny Cash. And people always ask me to have pictures of my other dogs. They're actually both passed away now. I had to put them both down.
Both your bull mastiffs?
No, the bull mastiff and the English bulldog Shiba Inu mix. They were both 13 years old, and Johnny couldn't walk anymore. It was really rough. The last few days of his life, I would try to bring him in for dinner, And when I would try to bring him in, he literally couldn't make it. It was a small yard where he was at. We're talking about, like, you know, 15 yards. He couldn't make it 15 yards to the house. He would, like, take a couple steps, and his body would shake, and he'd take a couple of steps, and he was just sleeping all day. And he was also having a really hard time shitting, and he would occasionally shit in the house. Like, he couldn't hold his bowels, and he couldn't go outside when he wanted to. Like, you'd see him trying, but his body was so old. For a Mastiff, 13 years old is crazy old. Like, a lot of them die at, like, 8 or 9,
yeah.
And he was 13. And he was a sweet, sweet dog up until the end, but he was suffering. It was hard. It's hard when you know them when they're a puppy, and then 10 years later, like, you're kind of the same, and they're not, man. They're gone, you know? Yeah. It's like, I think about that with Marshall, because he's only a year and a half, and he's so full of life, and he's so fun. He's so silly and playful and happy. I'm like, man, there's going to be a day where Marshall's this old, old, old dog, and I'm going to have to put him down too, you know? It was depressing. And the other one, Brutus, the Shiba Inu English Bulldog mix, he was better than Johnny for a long time. Still, I've known for the last 2 years that they didn't have much time left. You know, they were both struggling hard. But Brutus took a real hard turn over the last few months where he wouldn't even come in. Like, I'd try to get him to come in. I'm like, come on, buddy, you want to eat? I'd try to put a little food in front of his face, and he would try to stand up, and his legs would be shaking. And it's just so hard, man. It's so hard watching them fade away, you know, and then also watching them suffer, you know, a lot of the last days where you have to decide where, you know, me and my wife had to have conversations like, look, we have to do something. Like, this is, like, one day we're going to come home, it's going to be a dead dog. And it's not like they're having a good time. Like, this is a horrible, suffering, slow demise. So,
did you have someone come to the house, or did you take them?
Yeah, it was rough, dude. It's rough.
Yeah, Priscilla's 7, and I mean, I got her when I first started doing this podcast.
How big is she?
140.
Yeah, that's a big dog.
She's
man.
Had 5 knee surgeries.
Oh my god, dude.
Yeah.
That's fucking expensive, too.
Oh, you have no idea.
I do have an idea.
I bet you do.
Yeah. I had a female pit bull that had 2 ACL reconstructions. She had both of her back legs done.
Yeah.
She blew one out. I got it fixed. She blew the other one out. I had to get that fixed, too. And with a dog, they shave the bone down. They don't, like, reconstruct it where they add, like, another ligament. They shave the bone down so it doesn't, so it, like, sits on it differently, so it locks in place, so it doesn't pop off and go, like, out of socket or whatever the fuck it is. But yeah, it's fucking, it's like 10 grand a pop, right?
Well, if it was, I mean, I'm not going to tell everyone how much, because they'd stop liking me in a minute. They'd be like, what kind of fucking Hollywood idiot are you? You just kill a dog like that. But she got 1 ACL. And then we fixed it. Then then while this one's healing, it's turning good. The other ACL goes out, so okay. We fixed that one. We're like, all right, we're done. And then as this one's healing, this one goes out again. And they're like, and that's when they're like, do you want to put it down?
Oh,
and I'm like, nah, man. I'm fucking. It was like 5 grand a pop, I think. And then it even adds up more, because then they're like, we should keep her here while she's healing, to do it. And
feed her diamonds.
Yeah. And then they realize as they're doing this one. That something's wrong with her kneecap.
Oh, geez.
And then they realize she's got, you know, it's overbreeding in her breed, that her kneecaps are bad. So they fix this one, replace both her kneecaps, and then one more goes out. And they're like, all right. But man, that dog is the greatest fucking dog.
Mastiffs are amazing. They're some of my favorite dogs ever. They're so chill.
Dude, the sweetest dog, like, gets up in bed with you in the morning. And just puts her face right up on you and just does one of those big cow breaths, like, and you're like, oh, I'm here.
They're so relaxed, too. They're just a different kind of dog.
Yeah.
Very relaxed, you know?
And I feel comfortable. When I go on the road, I feel comfortable knowing there's a 140-pound animal that would give its life for my daughters.
Yeah.
It's one of our dogs sleeps in one of our daughter's beds. One of our dogs sleeps, Priscilla sleeps in George's bed. And I go, I'm good.
Mm.
No one's coming in anywhere. No one's breaking in anything.
Yeah. I got a buddy who was a German Shepherd, a police dog, and it's one of those dogs that he has to be with all the time and train all the time.
Yeah.
But this dog, it's a disturbing thing to have, because you basically have an assassin that lives with you that's just waiting for orders, just waiting.
Yeah. My buddy's got a German Shepherd that he hasn't quite figured out yet.
Oh.
And
you can't work a full-time job and just leave that thing alone in the yard. You just can't.
They're intense dogs.
They're intense.
And they're smart as fuck. So in a weird way, it's like dealing with a complicated chick. You're like, I know you have daddy issues, but I can't really figure them out. And I'm not spending enough time with you.
Oh, you can't fix them. You could train a dog.
Yeah.
Try training a woman.
Fuck.
Get out of here. You can't. If you meet someone, I don't care, a woman or a man. You meet someone who's completely fucking crazy, you got to get out of there. You got to go. You can't just, I want to fix him. We know a lot of people that try to fix him. Like Brian Cowan, when I first met him, was always trying to fix these crazy girls. And I was like, dude, you got to save yourself. You got to save yourself, man. You can't fix someone. You can't.
I remember the day I decided I would never fix a chick again. It was a one-night stand, and I came in like 15 seconds. and I told her, I said, hey, I came. And then I was about to say, give me a second, let me reboot, and we'll go back at it. And she was on top of me. She goes, are you fucking kidding me? And she punched the wall. She goes, you got to learn how to fuck. You need to read a book or get online and learn how to fuck. And I gently rolled out of bed, and I was like, I think you need to go home. I was like, wow. This isn't happening anymore. And then she was like, excuse me? And I was like, listen, I'm not your boyfriend, and I'm not your fucking husband, and what I just saw, I'm not going to be able to help. And she was like, and then you can see it in her eyes, like, I got to get on a train and go to Brooklyn. She was like, and they started getting pissed. By the way, I'm in my kitchen now in New York. Condom's still on. I go to this is how it tapped out I am. I go grab a beer out of the refrigerator, still naked, condom on, start drinking a beer. My roommate Weecho walks out and he's like, what the fuck? I go, I got it handled. Don't worry about it. Walk her to the door. And this might be the most beautiful moment of my life. Walk her to the door. And she's like, are you fucking serious? Are you fucking like in my face? And she goes, you're pathetic. You're fucking, and like tries to humiliate me. And I go, listen, I fucked you and came. I won. And she looks at me and goes like this, and goes like this. And I flinch so fucking hard. I go, and we both start laughing. And
she started laughing.
Oh, we both start laughing immediately. And then she just smiles and goes, it's 4 in the fucking morning in my apartment building. And she goes, Bert Kreischer can't fuck, and starts banging on doors. I'm like, all right, this is over.
Wow.
Take the charge.
What a good catch. You keep her number?
No.
Follow her on Facebook occasionally. Check in, see where she's in jail.
Oh, no. You want to hear a really great story? So before I fucked her, one night, I jacked off in front of her. Like, not in a Louis way, but, like, we both masturbated.
Not in a Louis way! Oh, poor Louis.
We both masturbated in front of each other in my apartment. Like, we were doing coke and like, candles lit and glass of wine. And she's like, I just want to, like, and it was cool. It was playful and fun. And we get done. And she's like, hey, just so you know, you can't tell anyone about this. And I was like, no, cause she knew a bunch of comics in New York. I go, I won't say a soul. I won't tell a soul. She's like, promise? I go, I swear to God. It's the next day.
Did you tell everybody?
Nope. So the next day, I'm walking to the Boston Comedy Club, and Rich Voss is out smoking a cigarette. I go, what's up? And he goes, heard you've jacked off in front of Jennifer last night. I was like, what? And he goes, me too. She needed a ride home from Brooklyn one time. Fucking Voss.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
Oof.
God, those are the days. I
those
loved it.
Those were the days.
Would you, if you could go back to one point in your stand-up career, for 1 year, you got to live 1 year in your stand-up career. You can't pick right now where you are right now, but you got to go back to one point when 1 year, every day you show up, and it's either like the store in 97 when you're meeting Ari and everyone, and you and Duncan's living on your couch or what, I don't know what year that was, but around then, or you go to the part where it's that, I mean, probably one of the more interesting parts is like when you get banned from the store from them and see a shit and you're like, literally like, fuck it. Like, I'm a man on a mission. Fuck. Like, that's one of the more interesting parts in your story of your life, in my opinion, is when everyone fucking backed out on you and you were like, nah, I don't go out like that, motherfuckers. And you just start fucking building. What year would you pick?
I would pick the early days. I'd pick like when I was just starting to get work.
when in Boston?
I was like a middle act. You know? I'd pick those days. Doing weird, shitty road gigs. You know, early 20s. Careless.
Yeah.
No responsibilities. No worries. No, nothing. Didn't even have a credit card. Had nothing.
Yeah.
Those were the good days in a lot of ways. It's not that today's not awesome. Today's way better, for sure. But what was good about those days is that there's so much wild and freeness. There's so much, you know, like I remember one time I did this gig in Maine. And then after the gig, met this girl. We had a couple drinks. We're hanging out. We're both like the same age. I think I was probably 22, 23. She's probably somewhere around the same age, 22, 23. And we're just young, and it's the summertime, and we hung out, and we wind up banging in my car. I had like a Honda Accord, and we didn't even go in the back seat because there was really barely a back seat, right? We like folded down the front seat flat, and then the windows rolled down, and we're just sitting there hanging out and laughing. And I remember having this unique moment where I realized, like, this is not going to be my life forever. I'm not going to be 22 years old with like $100 in the bank, not knowing what I'm doing, not knowing where I'm going, not knowing what the future holds, but yet okay with it. Like, you can only be okay with that for a certain amount of years. When you're 45 and you have $100 in the bank and you don't know what you're doing, and your career is not really established, you don't really have a clear path, that's scary. Mm-hmm. That's dangerous. It feels like you're a loser. You know, you feel pathetic. You feel like you haven't done what you need to do. There's like a certain amount of discipline that you haven't taken part in. And because of that, your life is chaotic. Whereas when you're 22 and that's happening, it's like that Bob Seger song. You know, like, what was that Bob
Rambling,
Seger
Rambling,
song?
Rambling, Grambling Man?
No. I don't remember which one. You know, he's got a lot of songs about
Night Moves.
Maybe it's like a rock. Maybe it's Night Moves. But the idea of that, you're recognizing that this is a unique moment in your youth, that it's all like, who knows what's going to happen? I mean, you might die in a car accident tomorrow. Mm-hmm. You know, who knows? You might never make it as a comedian. You might take a job somewhere and you might always have regret. But right now you're having fun. Right now you're basically just a couple of years out of high school. And, you know, you did a comedy gig. And now you're meeting some pretty girl, and you guys are laughing, and you're hanging out, and you're having a good time. And it's summer, and the windows roll down, and the air is warm, and it's just, it was something amazing about it. Those days were fascinating, man. And Greg and I, Fitzsimmons and I, did a shit ton of gigs together. We worked together a lot back in those days, because we started out within a week of each other. We were open micers at the exact same time, and we did a ton of gigs together. Yeah, we basically traveled all over the place together. We did a lot of gigs in Rhode Island and all over the place. All the Massachusetts Hell gigs, we did all those things together. And we still to this day, we'll look back and laugh at those days. Hey, Jamie, Gerard Carmichael is at the wrong spot. Tell Jeff to get on the ball. Those days were... They're just real unique in that you really have no idea. You have no idea what the fuck the future holds. It's a completely different experience. Like, your life is a completely different experience than it will ever be ever again. And I remember that. I remember that moment. I don't know why it's that one night with one girl that I never talked to again. You know?
Yeah.
Because back then you'd have to call someone. They'd have to be home. Like, in 1990, they had to be home.
Yeah.
You call them on the phone. If they weren't home, you're like, well, I guess they're not home. You know, it's like it wasn't like today. You know, you could text someone or you can email them or nope. You had to call them at their house. There's a few of those that I remember.
Yeah.
You know?
The idea that you didn't have phones. Like,
it's amazing.
I remember road trips with Tom, and we just would talk for fucking
hours, right?
Hours. We drove to Sacramento one time, talked for 5 hours there, 5 hours, 10 hours you spend with a human being. No one's on their phone.
Yeah. There's something real about that, right? I think we're definitely missing something. We're definitely missing something with these phones. But then we're gaining something, too. We're gaining a lot more information.
I'll tell you what, my kids haven't lit anyone on fire. Like, we did that when we were kids with no phones. We lit a kid on fire one time just because we were bored.
Yeah. 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 I don't know, man. There's good and bad. It's like it balances out, I guess. But if you had to go back to any time in your comedy career, when would you go?
When I first started headlining. Like right when, like that first time I just had kids. They were young. I was making $1,300 a week on the road, and I was so passionate about stand up. I was kind of pretty hacky, I bet, but like I just would give everything every night. Six shows Thursday through Sunday. And I'd fly in early for press, and I'd get excited to do press. And I'd come in, and I'd just be like, and I had my notebook with me all the time. And I was like, every idea was like a brand new field. Like, you felt like you were really just, it felt like you just discovered the internet, and every page had so much to offer. And then I think I got into, when I got into Travel Channel stuff, I kind of just, kind of took a second back seat. Because I was headlining, and I was like, yeah, I can do this confidently. And I think I'm there now. Like, right now, I feel like I'm back to this place where I go, like, I'm just writing so fucking much where I'm like, oh, God, like, everything. I feel like everything.
That's the thing that happens when you have to do a special every couple of years when you're filming. The one thing that definitely happens is you're forced into this creativity. You're forced to. Whereas we're both aware of those people that don't write. And they sit around for a long time with the same material, and then it goes year after year after year, and then it gets staler and staler and flatter. And
or the kind of people that write the exact same joke next year, their hours the same hour, it's just they say it differently.
Mm.
That was for me. I took this hour so fucking seriously. I took it like I was saying to someone the other day. I did 150 sets. I performed that hour 150 times. Before I did it on Netflix, or before I did it in the truck.
Mm.
I did it 150 times. I did the math. I went, wow, man, I rearranged it. Like, that working an hour and figuring out where to place stuff and figuring out where stuff should go, I'm obsessive about that.
Where'd you film?
In the Trocadero.
Oh, nice.
Two shows. The second show was a dream.
That's a great spot.
I lowered the stage so that I'm in the audience. I put a half moon in there so it wasn't just a little plank. No smoke machine. I'd seen everyone had smoke machines. I didn't want a smoke machine. And I think it really paid off. This sounds silly, and you won't notice this when you watch a special, but because that place is so old, there's little particles of dust everywhere, and you can almost see them in the back. It looks like it's like little stars in the back. I love it.
Particles of dust, really?
Yeah, it looks badass. It looks fucking badass.
What is your writing process like? Do you write stuff out on paper? Do you write it on a computer? How do you do it?
I don't sit and longhand anything anymore because I end up losing so much. It just doesn't help. So what I do is if I see something or if something happens, it's usually something happens to me and then I go, oh, that's the bit. And I'll write it in my phone and I'll just put it in my phone or I'll also write it in my book. Because I bring my book with me on stage, and I'll go to my book, and I'll see the one-word thing. I say I tell stories, and I know I'm known for telling, like, 12-minute stories. But, like, most of my stories are a little tighter now, and what I'm writing is a little tighter. So I kind of work it out on stage, mostly. But I record every set. I then go through the recordings. I write a lot on stage, and I'll write down. I'm like, fuck, that's funny. Like, even stupid, silly lines. And so that's the part where I – And then once I get it like that, then I record it again and I find the parts where the silence is or where I'm lazy, where I go, oh, I need something. I can't just go, suck my dick. And that's the punchline. But yeah, I record it, I write it, but I don't longhand write it. It just doesn't work for me.
So when you say you write it, like how are you writing it? Are you just writing like bullet points?
Yeah. So I'll write. Bullet points, like I'm trying to think of the okay. So like I have the joke, my best joke I'm telling right now, without a doubt, is about kind of about you, but it's not about you at all. But the opening thing was just the only part I'll tell you is I went into a Starbucks and I thought I was getting recognized. And a young black kid behind the counter came up to me. He's like, dude, like oh my god, and I'm like, yeah, and he's like, I'm a huge fan of Joe Rogan's. And I was like, oh, and so then. Me and him had an interaction, and I made him laugh. And I went, oh, that was funny. So then the next day, I came back, and I made him laugh again. And I went, oh, I know where this is. So then I write it out, and I figure it out. The next other interaction was so big, I realized, oh, I needed three of those. So then I'll punch it out. But I and I find the things that make it rhythmic and the things like, for me, things that catch an audience is like I go, and then he fell down. And then when the woman said something, he gets up, leans up, like it's almost the rhythm right. of the way to say it for me before. Along with the joke, if that makes
That's
any sense.
That's definitely the case. Like, if someone's a really good storyteller, it's like there's a whole thing going on. There's a physical thing going on. There's a rhythm thing going on.
Like, Stanhope is really good at rhythm. Like, when jokes he says, like, it's easier for me to talk about Stanhope than about myself. But, like, when he's talking about ISIS and how they recruit people, and it's identical to how he recruits people. and he goes, ISIS, I'm working this corner. Like that phrasing, a good phrase for me. Burr does it amazingly.
What does he say he does that's similar to ISIS?
He was watching a video. This is on his special, so I'm not putting any jokes out. This is on his special. He talks about how ISIS goes online and finds like pathetic young men who can't get laid and have drinking and drug problems, and and then they bring them in and they show them a good time and they get them drunk, and he's like, that's how I recruit people. And the line is so great. He's like, ISIS, I'm working this corner. It's such a great old Barker's technique.
He's got the weirdest fucking life ever. I mean, he's basically Dude. Got a little cult going on in Arizona.
He wants to do Sober October.
What? Come on.
Yep.
Is he going to take the yoga classes?
Yeah.
We should make him. We should rent a house for him in L.A.
Yeah.
So we give him incentive to come here. I've been trying to get him to move back here forever. I'm like, what are you doing with your little cult down there? Come on, man. Come hang out at the store. Because he hung out at the store a couple nights. He's like, this place is incredible. It's amazing. I go, it's amazing. I go, this is Valhalla. This is the craziest, in terms of what I've experienced, this is the craziest era of stand-up ever. And the store is the epicenter. I'm like, you should be here all the time.
Yeah.
And he's like, I don't know. I go, what do you mean you don't know? You're Doug fucking Stanhope. Get in here, man. I go, just get an apartment near here.
It would be great if he was here for all October.
God, we could just talk him into staying. I'm like, why don't you get a place here and there? You're a wealthy man of leisure. Do whatever you want.
I called him up one morning or one night. It's like 5 o'clock at night. And I was like, bullshit. And I go, what you up to? And this is why I love Doug. He goes, I'm having grapefruit and vodka, having a cigarette, trying to think of some goofs. I go, what? He goes, I'm trying to rework knock-knock jokes. I'm trying to make knock-knock jokes present. Like, let me run one by you. And he tells me, like, his version of a knock-knock joke. And it's so fucking funny. And I go, Doug, how old are you? He's like, oh, 49, 50. I go, and you're just sitting in your pajamas writing goofs. And he goes, that's our life. I was like, fuck yes.
Yeah, that's his life.
My daughters will see me doing it where I'm like, we're out to dinner and something will happen and I'll just be like, and I'm like mouthing to myself and I'm working the bit.
Yeah.
And they're like, are you writing a joke right now? And I'm like, yeah, sorry.
I get up and run. I get out of the room.
Oh, for
I go,
real?
I'll be right back. Be right back. Be right back.
Oh,
everybody
really?
Leaves me alone. Yeah.
No,
I have an idea. If I have an idea and anybody gets in there, the idea will escape. It'll slip away. Like if I have an idea, especially kids, like young kids, they just start talking. Like, they just start, and then they demand your attention, and, like, you have to, capture a bit, you have to have silence. Like, you can't have people talking at you, or you'll consider what they're saying, like, oh, really? Yeah? And then, what was I just thinking of? Shit! It'll go away.
Yeah.
So, I treat those things like they're gold. Like, if I have an idea, and it's a real idea, like a real idea, where I get excited, I'm like, oh, shit. I run. I get up off the table. Right back! Right back! Gotta go! Got an idea! And, you know, people were not into that and don't get creativity and don't write or don't do stand-up, it'll weird them out.
Oh, yeah.
And you have to come back and apologize. Like, sorry, I just had an idea and I had to capture it in the moment. I have to write it down.
Oh,
and I'll show it to them on my phone. Like, look, I had to write it
down. Oh, I'm a daydreamer. I literally will sit and just talk in the middle of dinner with my family and just talk something out. Just be like...
So you can hold it while you're talking to them about other shit.
Oh, I don't know. I tap everyone out. I tell my Uber drivers, hey, man, I'm not crazy. I'm a comic. And I just sit and I'll work a bit out like this. Like, like I got high as fuck the other night. I got high as fuck the other night. This is before the triathlon because I wasn't smoking pot up and – or no, it was before the triathlon. I walked in and I walked in the house. I was way too high. I was coming back from the store, I guess. And – I walk in the kitchen, and my bull mastiff is putting away the silverware.
What?
Yeah. She's got elbow on the counter, putting away the silverware.
Putting away the silverware.
That's what I said. And she looks at me like, are you going to fucking help? And then I realize, oh, she's eating a cake on the counter. But I was so high. And then
the dog was eating a cake on the counter?
Like just up on the, with hand stabilizing and just going.
Oh, my God.
And I started laughing so hard that my brain thought it was silverware that I was like, oh, I walked right out to the man cave. And Joe, I must have stood there for an hour trying to write that bit. Like just going.
Did you take the cake away from the dog?
Yeah. It was a coffee cake. We were fine. Actually, I went up and helped her eat it a little bit. She looked at me and she's like, we're doing this together? I was like, yeah, we're running a train, bitch. And so, but I went into the man cave and I just was talking and my wife came back and I'm standing in the man cave just going like, just hands moving. Like, and then I was like, oh, I walked in. She's doing it. Like, my wife's like, are you going to bed? And I was like, I'm sorry, I'm in the middle of a bit. And she's like, all right. And just left.
Yeah, I'll jump up in the middle of the night.
Yeah,
if I have a bit that's in my head and I'm in bed, I've said to myself before, I'll remember that. And I never do.
Fucking remember
never.
It. Never.
Occasionally, 1 out of 100 times, I'll be like taking a leak and I'll go, oh, yeah. And then I'll remember it.
Yeah.
Those jokes are slippery. Like Neil Brennan said it best. He said that he thinks of his notebook as like a net for catching ideas. I'm like, ooh, I like that.
Yeah.
That's a good way of looking at it.
You gotta have something on you at all times because something happens all the time.
Yeah.
Where you're like,
well, the phone is the best, man.
Dude.
I don't know if you use the dictation feature.
No.
You ever do that?
I won't ever listen
notes?
To it.
No. With notes.
Oh yeah.
You just talk and it'll voice to text.
On the plane last night, or wherever I was yesterday night, I was trying to type in white supremacist, and it came up white supreme hoodie, and I thought, oh, that's funny. That you'd try to like, I ordered a white supremacist hoodie on accident. Like, and so then there's nothing to it right now.
Right.
But I wrote it and I go, all right, well, we got that in the pocket.
Yeah.
I got them all.
You never know.
White the fuck up. I just heard someone say
Do
that.
Do you ever have, I have hundreds of them that never did anything. So I'll go over through them. Like sometimes if I'm stale, I'll just go scrolling through them. I go, what do I got here? Oh yeah, I never tried that. And one of those I never tried, I tried last night at the Ice House. And there's something there. It's not good yet, but it's a seed. There's something there, and you got to water those seeds, and you got to take chances with them, and you got to know how many of those dud seeds you can plant in a set while people are sitting there paying attention. Like you got to give them real bits too,
bro.
But you got to also have like last night. Anybody came to the show? Hope you had a good time. But I had at least four solid duds in there. And I'm just. Trying. I don't know where I'm going with them. And then I go places. I'm like, Jesus, what are you even saying? Like, why so extreme?
I will go at the end of my show. Like, I'll work everything that's working. Like, right now, I got about 52 new minutes. And so everything that's.
Damn, that was quick.
Yeah,
from when?
From when I shot my special.
How many months ago?
Shot it in February.
Wow.
Yeah. I got 52 minutes now that I am.
Why are they spending that much time before they show it?
I don't know.
That's a long ass time.
Shot
isn't
it in February,
March, April, May, June, July, August. 6 months. I guess that's right.
Yeah, Eliza's a little shorter, but not much. But just like a month, maybe we shot ours on the same day. And so, like,
that's great though. That you already have 50 minutes.
I'm back. Like, I'm just in it. I like it. I'm where I'm at. It's also my thing. It's like the only thing I got. That's what's making me money. So that's where my eggs are.
God, isn't it so much better than working for the Travel Channel?
You have no fucking idea.
I remember when you were doing it, I was telling you, like, Bert, you're a funny guy, man. You could be making a living doing comedy and not having these bosses and be on roller coasters every weekend.
And biting your tongue. Remember I used to smoke weed in here and you guys have to move
you
the
have
cameras?
To hide. You have to hide the weed.
Yeah. I don't remember that.
God, that was so crazy. But that's what happens with one of those gigs.
Yeah.
Howie Mandel went on stage at the Laugh Factory once, and he was talking about how scared he was that he could say something on stage and someone could tell his bosses, because he does a family show, and that he could get fired. And I was like, wow. Like, you're a comic. Like, he's Howie Mandel. Dude, when I was just coming up, just starting, he already had specials, and they were really funny. He was really fucking funny back then, man.
Dude,
Howie
amazing.
Howie Mandel back in the day, some of his early CDs, really hilarious shit. But And he's still funny.
Yeah.
I mean, he's still a funny guy. He's always going to be a funny guy. But when I was watching him say that, I was like, that is the craziest thing I've ever heard. He's worried about getting fired for saying something on stage, like saying fuck in his act or talking about something in his act that someone deems too inappropriate for a family show. And he can lose this gig at, like, America's Got – was he on America's Got Talent? Is that what he's on?
The Wall or something?
Can you imagine wanting that gig?
Dude, I can't. I Travel Channel. I mean, I'm not. Travel Channel came back very recently and asked me if I'd come back.
Oh.
And they're like, "What? Tell us whatever you want to do." And part of me was like, "I think I'm doing it. Like, I have a Netflix special. I have my podcast. I have a solo podcast. I've got Something's Burning.
You're always on the road doing stand up.
Yeah, I love writing. I mean, I'm writing faster and better now than I've ever written. And this special, I mean, the best compliment I've ever gotten is Tom watched it and was like, I had tears in my eyes, and it's you. This is you. It's who you are. Mm. And I was like, man, fucking, I wish you worked for the New York fucking Times. Like, that is the greatest comment. But, yeah, like, what am I going to – I mean, I talked to Jamie about it after. I was like, I don't mind shooting content, making free content, putting it out on my own watch, like – going to swim with orcas in Norway and me shooting it and doing it, or me and you going spearfishing in Miami and covering it and shoot it and editing it so that it's badass music. And I don't even care if it's monetized, but it's something that people watch are like, fuck, that's badass. Yeah. I don't mind doing any of that. But to do something with someone else giving me notes and telling me how I should behave.
Well, not only that, the Travel Channel's super conservative, right?
Well, they got bought by Discovery, so they're loosening up a lot.
Oh, weren't they owned by, like, some Christian network or something like that?
The previous owners were Scripps, and they were very faith-based.
Faith-based.
And so, like, you know, I think that's...
Chick-fil-A. They're owned by Chick-fil-A. Fuck, man.
So, yeah, it's nice to know that you go... Like, you say something fucked up on stage... And your only repercussion is the one chick that's like, that was fucked up.
And you're like, yeah, I know. I took a chance.
Yeah, I rolled the dice, guys.
I didn't even know what I was saying before I said it. No, it's beautiful to see you working so hard and getting things done. And also doing that with, like, your running in the marathons and all the Spartan race shit. Like, you're fucking doing shit, man. You're getting after it. It's great, man. It's great to see. You know, it's great to see you put together this special and work so hard at it. You know, it's great. I mean, we're in a real cool time right now. Like, everybody's kind of killing it.
I think so. I look at what everyone's doing, and they're all doing it on their own pace.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Like, you look at Ari, and he's like texting me and Big J and Sal, and he's like, yo, you guys want to go skiing and do a show to pay for it? And then we're all like, yeah. And he's like, all right, these are the dates.
Yeah.
But just so you know, we'll be watching the Super Bowl together.
Yeah. No, he's killing it in his own way, you know? Everybody's killing it in their own way. It's really fascinating. It's interesting, you know?
It's true autonomy. It's what, you know, it's like, mm-hmm. you know, when we all started doing this podcast with you and showing up at your house, the little things we'd see, we'd be like, I remember Tom was saying something about, remember sitting on that couch?
Yeah.
And you'd sit on the couch, you'd just be backing it, and you'd be like sunk in and high as
terrible.
Fuck.
Terrible couch for doing podcasts.
Oh, God!
Yeah, that was Ari's couch at his house
for real?
A long time. Yeah, I gave it to him. Yeah, after I got it out of my podcast studio, I had it shipped over to Ari, and then he used it as his couch, and then I think he sold it online.
Really?
He sold it online, right?
On eBay, I think, yeah.
There's parts of that old podcast I missed. Do you remember your landline would ring all the time?
All the time.
I love that.
How about my kids when they were real little? When they were like two, they'd be screaming in the background like someone would stub their toe.
Yeah.
And they'd be crying. You would hear it in the background.
That was the evolution of it. Fun fucking time, man.
I had a lot of people come to my house, though, and it was weird. Like, it was cool when, like, Bourdain was over or, you know, Jim Jeffries is over. But every now and then I'd have someone over. I'd be like, I don't even know if I like this guy in my house. Some fucking weirdo who I brought on the podcast, and now they've been to my house. It's like, it was too intimate.
That's why my podcast is still at my house, and we're talking about... Tom's doing it, and he's like, you know, I can't just have these people in my house.
Right.
And so I want to get a studio.
What's Tom going to do?
I don't want to tell everyone Tom's business, but I think he's probably pretty open. But he's going to, like, he's going out. He's going big. He's going to do what you're doing on this, probably a smaller level. He wants to start shooting stuff and making, like, his own branded content that's just Tom Segura. His sense of humor, him and Push. Do their podcast out of there. Do her podcast out of there. Make shows.
What we should do is we should get another space. and build it up just like this space and have one that's got like four studios in it. And dude, a bunch of us can use them, and you just pay a certain amount of rent per month.
Man, that's where I'm at. I look at, and Jamie and I talked for a little bit before you got here, but like, you know, Men's Health covered this, but I shot the whole fucking thing. Like, I shot all of it. I shot the Spartan race and edited it, and wow, it's fun for me. Like, I shot the whole thing. I just went around and set up a camera, go do the event, grab the camera. Set up the camera, do the thing, give the camera to Mike Bertolina, do the thing. And I did that with the marathon, covered the whole fucking thing on my phone. It's like, if I could get myself a junior fucking editor, bro, I'll put out content every day.
Throw out the bat signal. Put it on your Instagram. Just say, you know, you're...
But I think I just threw it out.
Don't do that.
You just did, though.
Yeah, you definitely just did. But you really want to make sure they're not crazy.
That's the hard part.
Yeah, because you get some dude integrated into your life, and they turn out to be insane. Because didn't David Spade... His guy, he had an assistant. His assistant tasered him. And
in the middle of the fucking night.
Someone threw a phone at her assistant.
Who did that? Him. Someone else did.
David Spade.
That was a girl. Threw a phone at their assistant.
That guy got broke into David Spade's house and tasered him in the middle of the fucking night.
How bad must he be to work for? For real?
I love it. That's what you pulled out of it.
I mean, it has to be. I'm not saying that it was justified. I'm not saying that.
Oh.
But... Come on, man. Something had to be fucked up.
Do you know for a fact that when they were doing the break... I love David Spade. I'm not shitting on him, but you know when they were doing the breakdown, the police officers were talking to David Spade. They're like...
You did nothing, huh?
Like, does he pick up your laundry?
Yeah. How long has he been working for you?
How many coffees do you drink a day?
Yeah. What was it that you said?
Oh, I love that that's your takeaway. How rough...
Dude, I got to wrap this up, unfortunately, because I got Gerard here.
I found that cartoon. If you want to get into it,
let's
this.
Wrap it up with this. Listen, Bert Kreischer, Secret Time, this Friday. Is it Thursday night at midnight?
Thursday night at midnight,
Thursday
August 24th.
Thursday night, midnight viewing party. That's tonight, you fucks. So tonight at midnight, it airs Secret Time on Netflix. I'm ready to blow the fuck up.
I'm in Irvine this weekend, Oxnard next weekend. But yeah, check out Secret Time. Thank you, Joe. Love you, brother.
Love you too, man. Bert Kreischer, here we go.
Fucking Tom.
This is so funny.
Bert Kreischer.
Secret Time.
I'm about to pass out.
That's actually probably better than anything they're going to come up with.
How much money does he have that he's making his own trailer?
He's balling! Balling, bitches!
Thanks, brother.
Oh, that was awesome.
That was really cool.